This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
In the 1990s, inspired by The Simpsons, an entire wave of animators started making cartoons for adults, and one of those animators was Lauren Bouchard. Bouchard worked on niche late-night shows like Science Court and Dr. Katz's Professional Therapist. And eventually Bouchard took to primetime as the creator of Bob's Burgers, about a family-run burger joint in some seaside town.
All right, listen, you're my children, and I love you, but you're all terrible at what you do here, and I feel like I should tell you, I'd fire all of you if I could.
Bob!
All right, hands in. All right, sell some burgers!
Sell some burgers.
Here's Sarah Larson, a longtime staff writer.
I've been a fan and admirer of Lauren's work since I first encountered it and him in the mid to late 90s. We were both living in Boston and working in the world of writing and comedy. We were used to The Simpsons being brilliant and kind of crazy, but this was funny in a different way. It's a mainstream-looking family comedy. They're a regular family. They run a burger restaurant. They have neuroses and vulnerabilities, but they're also very plucky and very creative, and they really love each other. They're weird, but they accept each other as they are, and they're always trying to make the best of everything.
After a decade on television, a Bob's Burgers movie just came out, and it's called, you guessed it, The Bob's Burgers Movie. And it's written and directed by Lauren Bouchard. Sarah Larson talked with him last week.
I was so excited when I found out that you were making a movie because I just had a feeling that what I love about Bob's Burgers on a small screen would just explode into glorious, wondrous, exciting stuff on a huge screen. Can you tell me about what intrigued and excited you about the possibility of making a movie as opposed to a show?
Yeah, it's sort of two parts. I think that one part is the easy part that probably all of us share, which is I love movies. I love going to movies. I love watching movies. I have always loved movies. And so that part was just built in, right? And then separately, there's the who do you think you are, you know, just pure gall to think that we could make one. And that happened in a very specific way, too. I remember clearly when we were quite sure that we shouldn't make one.
Why? That was what was that all about?
Well, that was just simply doing the show. We spent so many, you know, seasons on the bubble, as they say. We were never a sure thing, you know, to get renewed. We always fought for our dinner. And kind of, in a way, got used to that. You know, it was like working in an emergency room. You know, we were just under pressure all the time. And when a fan, and it was always at first the fans who brought it up, when a fan would say you should make a movie, it was kind of like, no, don't say that. You know, we can barely make this show. You know, we don't even know if we're going to get picked up. And so it felt, I would squint at that and recoil with a little bit of fear.
Can we back up and talk a bit about how you got into animation in the first place and your evolution as a writer and director and composer and so on?
I love telling the story because it's you know, it's a study in luck, in sheer, incredible luck on a you know, galactic scale. I was raised by creative, artistic people. I had many creative and artistic urges, but I got a little derailed. Mm. My mother died when I was a teenager, and I had a few years of drifting a bit, and I did not finish high school, and I was working mostly bartending. Despite not finishing high school, I got a high quality education up until that point, I should say, because my father was the art teacher at a private school in Cambridge, Mass. And so my sister and I got a full ride there. And so I, as part of that, I had known this guy, Tom Snyder. He had been the science teacher at the school, at the grade school I went to. Hmm. You know, he was a really fantastic teacher and just a magnetic personality. Hmm. And so, and I think I had piano lessons from him for a time. I was connected to the guy. He was a sweet presence in the, you know, my middle grades, fourth, fifth, sixth grade. Then he left teaching. And I, you know, to some extent had stayed in touch. I'm 23 years old. I am quite sure that I have wrecked my chances of having the life that I had imagined for myself, which is to say a creative life. I was taking, you know, classes at the Cambridge Adult Ed Center. I was thinking maybe I could try to be a writer or a cartoonist or something. I had this sense that there was a job for me that, you know, combined my interests. I even had a sense that animation would be good. I had, you know, I'd been watching The Simpsons. It had come on, I think, maybe when I was about 18. And so I understood this, that there was this world, but I had no idea how to access it. I had no sense that I could figure out a way for me to get into it. I run into Tom Snyder in Harvard Square, and I'm coming out of an art supply store. I believe he's on his way to a funeral. We just cross paths on the street. And he says, "Hey, do you still draw on stuff?" And I say, "Yeah." And he says, "Well, come see me. I might have some work for you. I've been getting into animation."
Wow.
And I knew it. I knew right then and there I was getting lucky. I experienced clarity like you wouldn't believe. I basically said, "I'll do anything." He said, "Okay, it's not going to be much money, and I can't promise anything, and this animation thing may not pan out." But it did. He had the great idea to team up with Jonathan Katz, this local comic. They had the great idea to make Jonathan into the therapist and then have other comics be do their stand-up routines, but have it be as if they're in therapy.
You know, Katz, what is wrong with me?
Well, you know, that's not such a simple...
Come on, you bloodsucker. How long are you going to suck off my teat before you cure me? Fix this! Fix this!
When I first saw Dr. Katz and then Home Movies, you know, we were used to this wonderful gift of The Simpsons in our cultural landscape, but the aesthetic that you guys had and the way you were doing what you were doing felt so new and so thrilling and different, because it felt conversational. It felt more realistic in the way that, you know, it had pauses. It sounded like the way people really talked.
To be fair, we wrote scripts for Dr. Katz, but they were treated somewhat as a safety net rather than as the script, the way we normally understand it. So we would have the actors improvise before they'd even read the script. We didn't want them to be colored by it.
Yeah.
The improv was really king.
Right.
Even now, I tremble to think what one of those scenes would look like. You know, if we'd written, you know, Dr. Katz makes a joke, Ben laughs, Ben makes a joke, Dr. Katz laughs. It's going to be treacly. But when it was improvised and discovered in the moment, it wasn't. Or I hope it wasn't.
And those shows were really beloved by the people who saw them, but a lot of people didn't see them. And I just, you know, it was such a tragedy in our world when Home Movies was on for a few episodes, and it was excitingly, you know, on buses that would go by, and I'd go, "What's happening?" And then suddenly it was gone and replaced by a show called Shasta McNasty. It was like, what is happening?
I used to tell people we weren't just canceled, we were extra canceled. The guy called after our first episode aired, and he said, "Your ratings were so bad, I would be fired if I even suggested you had a chance at renewal."
Yike.
Yeah, got extra canceled. We got canceled, and then he kind of just like pushed the coffin lid closed as I was still trying to, you know, wedge my fingers out.
Can you just tell me a bit about creating Bob's and what that moment was like and what you were looking for?
I had been thinking about a family that runs a restaurant. I've been thinking about it for years, in fact.
Why?
I'd had a few iterations. I just was fascinated. I'd worked in restaurants and I had, you know, frequented restaurants where the kids were, you know, behind the counter. And, you know, it's just evocative of a certain kind of childhood. And I just was excited by that. So we made, in this first iteration, we made the family also cannibals. So a family that runs a burger shop, finding victims, grinding them up, making burgers out of them, Sweeney Todd style. We did not get very far. Blessedly, the network simply said, we love the idea of a family that runs the restaurant. You don't need the cannibalism. Why do you want the cannibals? And I basically just felt relief.
Huh.
I think you're right. I don't know. I put it in out of fear. And if you don't need it, then I certainly don't need it. So we suddenly released from that feeling that we had to be that, you know, edgy. And that sort of high concept. And we could simply be, I don't know what Bob's is. Let's call it low concept, a family that runs a restaurant. That was it. That was the hook. And they were happy with it. And so was I.
There's something I love about the way that the movie opens as it begins. You know, they're all worrying about money. They've got this loan that they have to pay back very fast.
We have a meeting this morning and we're going to ask for an extension on a loan payment.
Oh, fun.
And we really, really need to get that extension.
And they're also thinking about their summers and who they're going to be this summer and what's going to happen this summer.
Only one more week of school and then I'm Summer Tina. And big things are coming for Summer Tina.
Big things like that heat rash you get sometimes?
Bigger.
You know, they all have these sort of beautiful notions of what might happen. And here you are. You've got this movie that's opening as the summer begins. It's a real summer movie. What are your thoughts about the summer and you and what will come of all this? What would you like for the summer?
I mean, you can imagine what I'd like. It's not hard to picture. But I go into this coming weekend with a lot of, fear, I guess, frankly. I'm being a bit Bobbish here, if I may use the characters to define my moment. But we are still a small movie. We aren't a big movie. It's a 2D animated movie. But I guess what I want to say is it is a smaller movie. It's a big movie in terms of our ambition of the storytelling and the scope and the spectacle, but I just don't think that I am going to be happy if I think this movie is going to be some kind of mainstream success, and then I find out I'm brought back to earth when the box office numbers come in and it doesn't compare, you know, to Sonic 2 or, you know, some Pixar movie or, you know, some movie, you know, animated movies have, you know, they can be incredibly successful. And I would love for that to be the case, but I also am fine if our movie is just beloved by the people who find it and who wanted that, be they fans or new fans, and I want to stay in that zone. I'm trying really hard to stay there so that I'm not knocked around by lukewarm reviews or lukewarm box office, because that I, you know, my little soul can't take it. If I let myself dream too big about the summer success of Bob's the movie, I think I'll be disappointed.
Well, you know, I think the thing I love about the Belcher family and the show and the movie is that whatever combination of good and bad that's going on all around them, they will just make the best out of whatever happens to be going on. And it makes you feel like, well, we can do that too, you know.
Optimism is a very powerful thing. We were making this movie during Trump, during COVID, and all the other things that are, really heavy in this moment. And we're raising families in this time, and optimism. It isn't cheesy, and it isn't just wishful thinking. It is, in fact, a stance. It's a choice. And it isn't because you expect a good outcome. It's because to face the future with a pessimistic attitude is worse for you no matter what comes. And I know that sounds funny given that I just predicted doom and gloom for the Bob's box office, but in fact, that's, I think, still exercising a sort of a double Dutch kind of backwards optimism, but it still feels like I'm just trying to imagine the best path for the movie that doesn't have to be, it doesn't have to be a box office smash in order to succeed.
Exactly. That is beautiful.
Like pretzels. Oh, thank you. I'm glad you think so.
Lauren Bouchard, the creator of Bob's Burgers. Talking with The New Yorker's Sarah Larson. The Bob's Burgers movie is out now.